Good morning, good afternoon. Today is July 5, 2016, and this is the business session of the Chelan Public Utility District, and I apologize if I missed something that I'm saying. I usually have a little cheat sheet here that I forgot to bring out to remind me to tell you guys that we're happy to have you here. If you want to come up and speak to any item on the agenda, that we need to have you come up to the microphone and state your name for the record. That we have four commissioners here. How am I doing so far, Sheila?
Good.
Okay.
Better without the cheat sheet.
Better without the cheat sheet? All right. And Mike Coleman is filling in for Steve Wright today, and Commissioner Bowles will not be with us today. Also like to remind you that we would like you to have you check your cell phones, make them silent or turn them off. We hate to be interrupted. And I don't know if I missed anything. We'd like to welcome all our guests. We have a full house, but it looks like most of the folks are staff members, but there's a few guests, I think, hiding here and there. And to start things off, we'd like to start with the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety Minute led today by Josh Mitchell.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thanks for letting me take a couple minutes to talk about bicycle safety. I'm Josh Mitchell, the residential energy advisor for the county here. So I thought, you know, I was going to do this in May when it was bike to work month, and I got sick, and so I'm here. I probably should be doing something along the lines of poison ivy or poison oak since I got into that last week. But somebody should have done that last week. So anyway, here's my 3 minute, should be a couple hour speech on bike safety, but we'll do it in 3 minutes. The bike safety really starts before you get on the bike. And we use the ABCs for the pre-ride check, and there's an acronym that stands for. So ABCs is air, check your air and your tires, you know, make sure that they're properly inflated. You know, there's a degree of, say it's a road bike, you want 85 to 110 PSI, and if you're underinflated, you could look at a pinch flat, and if you're overinflated, you're looking at popping a tire, and that's not safe. So the A you got for air, B is check your brakes, make sure that you have at least an inch or an eighth of an inch on your brake pad so that you have enough stopping leverage. And also check, make sure your brake levers are tight so that you can actually stop when you need to stop. So then you got your C's, ABCs. C's are your cranks. Make sure your cranks are on tight. They're not gonna pop off when you don't want them to. You wanna make sure your chain actually looks like metal and not like gunk or rust. Otherwise that can break while riding. And then also make sure your cassette is, which is in the back of your bike, make sure that's free and clear of any debris that might pop your chain off as well. So that's your pre-ride check. While riding, you want to ride SMART, and that's an acronym that Cascade Bicycle Group uses to, SMART stands for stay alert, make sure you're not on your phone, make sure you're not wearing earbuds or covering your ears with big headphones. Make sure that you're presumed not to be seen with amongst other people sharing the road. So you're staying alert, you're maintaining your space, making sure that you know you have your proper distance, stopping distance between other vehicles and other cyclists. You're acting safely and predictably. So if you're, you know, you want to be wearing a helmet that you actually can, that's properly fitted, that you can see, and also presumed that you can be seen, so you're wearing bright colors. If you're riding at night, you have a blinker and a headlight as well. So so SMART is respecting the rules of the road. If you're a cyclist, you follow the rules of the road. You're allowed on the road, but you need to be following. And then also, you know, the last one is, so SMART, thinking ahead and talking to your other cyclists. So presume you're not being seen again, looking at, you know, trying to make eye contact amongst other riders and other vehicle drivers. So making sure you're communicating to your other cyclists if there's a pothole, make sure that they know that so that you can, so that they don't fall in that pothole. And the last thing is, you know, if I'm going to talk about bike safety, I also want to talk about sharing the road with cyclists. And if you're going to be driving on a road, you're going to be sharing the road with cyclists. And that's a good thing. Sharing the road with cyclists, actually, if you see cyclists on the road, that means that it's a more livable community. It makes, you know, people are trying to stay healthy, and that's a good thing. So if you are a motorcyclist, or if you're a motorist, you're sharing the road, you want to remember that people belong on the road, you know, whether it be a bike or any other pedestrian. As a cyclist, you want to give 3 feet of space when passing, and you want to make sure you're looking behind you when you merge back on to give them plenty of space. So you also want to don't underestimate a cyclist's speed. When they're going down a hill, they might look smaller than a car, but they often are going faster than what you think. So make sure that you're giving safe distance when you're, for example, taking a left-hand turn. You want to make just double check that you're not going to blindside that cyclist. So also make sure when you're opening the, you know, if you're parked and you're opening a door alongside the road, you don't want to open that door without looking to make sure that there's not a cyclist to the left of you. So the other thing, the last thing I want to talk about is when you're driving through neighborhoods, presume that children on bicycles are going to act unpredictably, and when you are riding through neighborhoods, make sure you're checking your speed. At 20 miles an hour, if you have a pedestrian accident, a fatality rate is only 5%. But if you are driving through a neighborhood at 30 miles an hour, that fatality rate goes from 5% up to 45%.
Wow.
And if you're driving at 40 miles an hour, that fatality rate goes up to 80%. So just something to think about. So wow. Thanks for your time. Do you guys have any questions?
Any questions? That was a good report. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh.
Commissioners, we have a proposed agenda before us. This time, if there's any item on the regular agenda that you want to transfer to the consent agenda, you can do that. Also, I'll be adding on item 11, commission items, I'll be adding Lisa Sanders to that so she can bring her once monthly list of what she has for our activities to us. That way I won't forget it. Any changes to the agenda recommended or not? Okay. Well, next item on the agenda is our public hearing of high density load, and I will turn it over to Eric Walquist.
Thank you, Commissioners. So today is the continued public hearing on the HDL load rate case. Staff does not have, so it was continued from the last board meeting, and the staff does not have any prepared remarks today, but we did want to come to you and open the hearing in an effort to provide an opportunity for the commissioners or any member of the public to provide comment or ask input on the revised staff report that was posted to the website and forwarded to the commissioners following the last board meeting. Staff isn't expecting or asking for any action today other than to hear those comments or respond to any questions. If there aren't any, we would ask the board to recess and continue the hearing until the 18th board meeting at 1 p.m., at which time I would anticipate staff asking for action if the board is so inclined. If not, of course, that is the discretion of the board. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to try to address them.
Commissioners, any questions of the staff?
Anything? I don't have any.
Any member of the audience wish to address anything on the HDL topic? This is the moment. This is the time. If not, we will recess and continue the hearing until 1 p.m. July 18th here in the boardroom.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right. Consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. All right. On to the regular agenda, and for conduct of business, I will turn it over to Acting General Manager Mike Coleman.
Thank you. Item 6 on the regular agenda is a resolution declaring ADS LLC, known as AcuSonic of New Bedford, Massachusetts, as the sole source supplier of flow meters for the Lake Chelan Hydro. And George Velasquez is going to present this.
Good afternoon, George Velasquez, EPM Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Manager. So here today to present a resolution to sole source some equipment. Lake Chelan penstock flow meter replacement. We are planning on awarding that to ADS LLC, also known as AcuSonic, for sole sourcing two new flow meter panels. The engineering and project management team conducted a diligent review on how to best source this out, and it was determined that the best potential source was to ensure that we had compatible equipment, and that equipment is manufactured by AcuSonic ADS LLC. A little bit of history on why we need these pieces of equipment. back in 2015, Unit A2 up in Chelan, the flow meter, one of the flow meters failed. Since then, a temporary programming code has been installed in the PLC, the program logic control system, and we use that now to govern the flows and the operation of that unit. The preferred alternative to correcting that issue, that calculation, that temporary manual calculations, is to procure and install two new flow meters. And those flow meters are the control panels that we use to calculate the flows. We will continue to use the existing transducers. There are 16 that are installed in the penstock. Those we will not remove or replace. The only thing that has failed is one of the flow meters. Flow meters are compatible with existing transducers, like I mentioned, and include all required features and functionality so we can monitor and operate those units optimally. The other note to make from AcuSonic ADS is that we did receive a manufacturer's certification that that they guarantee they offered the district the lowest price possible for public utility districts. Any questions?
Any questions? Gary.
George, what is the cost?
The cost for the flow meters and programming installation is not to exceed $60,000.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? I guess one that comes to my mind, the sole source provider status that we're talking about, with everything you've got still in play, this is the reason we're doing the sole source is they're the only guys that can do this.
That's correct. Their equipment provides the functionality that we need to operate and get accurate readings through those transducers.
Otherwise, you'd be into a much more major project.
Yeah, we would have to swap everything out.
Okay. Additional questions?
Okay.
Yeah.
George, I'm assuming that the cost for swapping it out or finding another supplier, which would include the new transducers, would be something greater than $60,000. Is that a reasonable assumption?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next resolution is item 7, a resolution authorizing the general manager of the district to execute a task authorization services agreement, SATA number 16-056, with HDR Engineering, Inc. of Billings, Montana, for professional engineering services related to transmission and distribution engineering support, and Jim Caldwell is presenting that.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Caldwell. I'm the engineer responsible for transmission line design and maintenance here for the PUD. We're here to request authorization for a task authorization service agreement for HDR Engineering. The district has used HDR for quite a few years. In the past few years, we've done projects for us like the recent NERC alert analysis and some of the remediation work design. We've also had them do things like design or line rebuilds, modifications, realignments, things like that. We anticipate using them for both capital and O&M projects over the next 3 years. Projects such as system studies, similar to what we have ongoing now with the Transmission Line Wildfire Risk Assessment Project. Feasibility studies, similar to, say, the Sunich Dead Horse Relocation Project that is currently ongoing. Line relocations, Upper White Pine Project, Andrew York Anderson Canyon 1 and 2 realignments are two projects that would be similar. Also, miscellaneous engineering support, where they would support staff, supplement our time, do peer reviews, items like that. We in the transmission department have determined that using a consulting firm is the best option for you or for some of this type of work, especially anticipating the current workload and the complexity of some of the designs that come down the road that we aren't equipped to handle in-house. HDR was selected utilizing the district's policies and procedures for selection consultant. And the total annual expenditures will not exceed any annual budgeted or any annual approved district budgets. And with that, I will open up to questions.
Questions?
Jim, so it's a combination of being complex, specialized tasks, and the fact that we just don't have enough resources with our own engineering department?
Yes.
It's both?
Both, yes.
And this is until 2019?
Yes.
Is that right?
Three-year project, or three-year service agreement.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I got a question. It's a three-year service agreement, and the projects you listed, are they over that span of time as well, that course of time, or are the projects you listed just current ones that we're working on today?
Those are current ones. We just set out for an example of things that we would use a service agreement for.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you.
Okay. Item 8, the next resolution is authorizing final acceptance of performance under bid number 14-78 with Electrotechnical Industries, Inc. of Humble, Texas, and authorizing payment of retainage. Tom Kelly is presenting this resolution.
Good afternoon. Tom Kelly, substation engineer, and I'm here today recommending and requesting your authorization for final acceptance and release of retainage for the substation switchgear for the new Cashmere substation. This new substation was placed in service in May, and since May 16th has been energized and serving customer load. And this is the last major piece of equipment and contract needing to be approved to completely close out that new project. As I mentioned, it's been operating since May 16th and seems to be all doing well. One thing I just want to point out, this switch gear is the first arc resistant switch gear that we've placed into service here at the district. It's just designed to add a little bit more protection for our personnel against arc flash and arc blast when they're working on the equipment.
Okay. Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next and last resolution, number 9, a resolution ratifying field work order numbers 1 through 5, authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 15-10 with Magnum Power LLC of Castle Rock, Washington, and authorizing release of the bond in lieu of retainage. And Brett Bickford is presenting that.
Good afternoon, Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. I'm presenting this closeout resolution on behalf of Vern Chamberlain, who's on PL today. And this resolution, again, is accepting 5 field work orders that were issued throughout the term of the contract and accepting the work in about $1.2 million. The 5 field work order items had no additional cost to the contract. Several unit priced items were needed to be added during the course of the work to help complete the work that needed to be done. This contract supplies qualified linemen and equipment to perform construction on the district's distribution and transmission systems. Magnum provided very responsive service and experienced staff, and even though they weren't utilized full time, they were able to bring back their foreman and leadership each time, which helped with continuity with working within the district's procedures. One lesson learned on this contract was that this and many other DOC contracts don't have any emergency declaration language, and so now contracts like this do. The advantage to that is then we can respond much more quickly in the event of an emergency like we had in Chelan last year, and so we don't have to spend the time negotiating language, working out terms, etc. So now they're all in the contract and we're ready to proceed expeditiously if they're needed.
What's that? How's that language go? What's it sound like?
So, Commissioners, this is a response in part to the fact that we're still shepherding our way through the unit price contracting issues with the State Auditor's Office and the Attorney General's Office associated with whether PUDs have the authority to enter into what the auditor has termed on-call contracts and what we would say are time and material or unit price contracts. And we're still working our way through that process. But effectively, the language just simply includes in the contract a provision that, in addition to the line items that are bid for those projects under $25,000, the reason for the under 25 is to keep us in line with the unit price contracting issues, that in the event there's an emergency declaration by Steve or the board, then those contract terms still apply and we are able to call out the contractor to respond in those emergency situations. So I don't have the specific language, but it effectively says that the contract terms and pricing shall apply in the event the district calls them out for emergency situations. So remember that in an emergency situation or a declaration of emergency context, the $25,000 limitation on the unit price contracting does not apply, right, because there's a waiver of competitive procurement obligations in emergency situations. So it just, what it does, Commissioner, is it means that when we have an emergency situation, Brett's team and Vern's team aren't out having to negotiate last minute contract terms for that. So if you've ever called a plumber or a HVAC tech at say 2 a.m. on a winter night, and their pricing always seems to be a little higher than it does if you've called them out in advance in ordinary business hours. So that's what we were experiencing. And we would have to go after an emergency declaration and negotiate terms that might be a little different and higher mm-hmm. than normal terms because of the emergency circumstance and the unplanned nature of mm-hmm. that work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Does that make sense to answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Any additional questions? Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Commissioners, you've got 4 resolutions before you. What is the will of the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 6, 7, 8, and 9 as presented.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the 4 resolutions that have been presented. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager items.
Manager items. First, we're going to have George Velasquez and Sean Seaman. They're going to provide another update on the Diverse Leader Program progress, which is designed to provide a collaborative effort to obtain more input from both the Hispanic, Latino, and low-income population.
Sorry, guys. I didn't have it up there. I'll get it for you. It's sitting by my desk.
It's over here. Sean. Oh.
Well, George, you want to get started? I'll bring up the presentation real okay. quick.
George Velasquez, Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Engineering Project Management Manager. So we're here today, if you recall, back throughout the strategic planning effort of 2014 and 2015. One of the recurring themes was that we weren't getting very much engagement from our Latino Hispanic community and our low-income customer owners as well. So one of the recommendations from senior management and commissioners was to try to develop ways to get further engagement and get perspectives from Latino Hispanics and low-income customer owners. So that kicked off our diverse leaders group, which included two subgroups, the Latino Hispanic group and then Sean's low-income group. So we're here today to give you an update on progress on how those two groups have been doing and performing, and share with you some of the action items that we've been working on throughout the year and will continue to. So if you recall, we had a series of meetings with the Latino Hispanic group customer owners, and they came up with three high-level, high-end recommendations for us to pursue and try to implement. one of the first things that we heard loud and clear was, you know, if we're serious about engaging Latino Hispanics and low-income customer owners, we need to invest in district staffing to focus on pushing these things forward. One of the things we heard in some of the meetings were, you know, we come up with, some of the members had come up, had been invited to other, not Chelan County PUD focus groups, but other focus groups, and all these great ideas come about, but there was never anybody to push those forward and make sure that things happened and they took action on those recommendations. So that was one of their first ones, is invest a little bit to make sure that these recommendations, if you're serious about them, that they move forward. that was the first and top recommendation. Another one was develop more to share information about available PUD benefits. And we do a great job of advertising everything we do, but we hadn't fully developed the plan to translate some of our current programs into Spanish, and we've been doing that very well from that point forward. The third one was create opportunities for diverse applicants to learn about and better prepare themselves for the job selection process here at the PUD. So those were the top three that they shared and were pretty passionate about. So what we've done is on the we had a diverse leaders workshop earlier this year, and that feedback we got from them was continue doing what you're doing, but we also want to include some type of a Latino or a bilingual phone line, communicate options, payment locations, and then we also wanted to share with them our public power benefit and what we had been doing. So on the education and diversity outreach position, the number one recommendation that they came up with was in investing in a lead person to push these initiatives and make sure that we get traction in action. We have developed the job description for that individual. Human resources, Lauren is leading that, led that job description development. Both Sean and I are on the team for that. Once we advertise that position, we'll be both be on the interview team. And that target date to advertise is Q3 of 2016. So good progress on that, good traction. We're moving forward. the bilingual information and communications, you're going to see a recurring thing between what Sean's group is doing and what the Latino Hispanic group was doing. But their charge was to increase information availability in a bilingual format. Like I mentioned earlier, in the past we had done a fairly decent job. Now we're really truly focusing on getting all the pertinent information that we need to get out in both English and Spanish. Our social media as well has been converted into, or has a converter that you can read it in both English and Spanish. The other one, create opportunities for diverse applicants. That's continuing. If you recall, last year, Ruth Erward, Human Resources, and a lot of other individuals here at the PUD put on a job fair, basically. And it was a mock-up of interview questions that are typically asked to people seeking jobs here at Chelan County PUD. And it was extremely well attended. There were, I think, over 100 people that attended that to gain more information on, you know, the types of questions and types of jobs and types of opportunities that Chelan County PUD offers. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean on the
quick
low
question
income.
First, on the bilingual format and the translator, having some level of familiarity with how those work, do you ever run into problems with being a Spanish translator rather than, you know, a Mexican language translator, because the languages are not the same?
Yes. Yeah, there's definitely some intricacies in the language depending on where you're from. But yeah, there are those issues. Sometimes when you translate straight out of Google Translator, it doesn't give you the same context. But in the printed information that we send out, we do some double checks. I've done some checks, and then we also hire have a longstanding contractor with an interpreter that also translates paper media for us. So we try to catch some of that, but it's tough if somebody goes in there and just hits the Google Translator. Sometimes the context is a little bit off.
Got a question, and following our outreach to the diverse leaders workshop, and I think that's really good, you know, organizing all of this, getting it set in place, having somebody follow it through. My question now is about the what are we doing now today to reach out? Because as I go through the community, you know, there's some messages that doesn't seem to be resonating in some areas, and one of it is the park, you know, the park pass.
Mm-hmm.
My experience is there's a lot of people don't understand this and don't know that it's available. And so, are we doing anything today other than setting up this program to reach out and communicate on a real time basis?
Yeah, I can share a couple of things that we've done. One of them, we did translate the flyer inviting them to apply for that park pass,
mm-hmm,
in both English and Spanish, and that went out. We printed, I don't know how many of them, but we've also been working with some of the agencies, such as North Central Washington Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, mm-hmm, Molina Healthcare, other entities that get high traffic of Latino Hispanics, and we actually handed them stacks of these flyers, mm-hmm, especially for the park pass. So they would understand the process and where to go to apply for one.
Are we doing radio or anything?
We've got a hand up over there. I think Suzanne Hartman.
Suzanne Hartman, Manager of Communications. Yes, Commissioner, we are doing radio. We also printed up the flyers that George is talking about and distributed them to all of the school districts. So they went home with K through six students, and we have them at all recreation centers and the YMCA. Excuse me. We're trying to do as broad a distribution as we can.
Yeah, I understand that. I know there's outreach to do that. It's just that in my, dealings, you know, it's in agriculture. A lot of that is touching the Hispanic population in that industry, and I have run up against a lot of people just don't know about it. And I'm just wondering if we're really reaching those folks, because they're appreciative of it. When I mention it to them, they go, "Oh, really? I mean, didn't know that." And they run down and do it. So it's just a matter of reaching out in a different way, I guess, to those folks. Maybe. That's my measure. That's how I tell if we're reaching out or not.
And I would welcome an opportunity maybe to talk with you about some of those channels that we maybe have missed.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Very good. Well, for the low income team update, the actions that we brought to you last December, December 21st, when we were last here, we talked about the education on payment options, the disconnect, reconnect fees, discounts, and landlord notification were the primary items that our group brought forward in the work we had done previously. So quick update on these. The education on payment options is an ongoing effort with these. Mainly we're working through with the agencies that have their clients or this group that we're really trying to get to. So the groups we're working for, of course, are called Community Action Council, the Child Services of Chelan and Douglas counties, the Serve Wenatchee, Enneat Valley Services, Chelan Valley Hope, Upper Valley Mand, and the Food Bank out of Kashmir. They've all been part of our groups. And a lot of the work we're doing is just get them the information about, if they're dealing with a customer and needs help, is to get to us early, get to our staff early in customer account, and they will work with these individuals, but you have to get to us, you have to respond, you have to get with us early and work with us. So that's part of the process. Carrie Wendell's here. She's been leading a group. She's really done a great job of getting that information to these agencies so they can get the information out to their groups. As long as they know that they just need to get a hold of us if they're facing troubles with paying the bills, staff will work with them. So that's a major aspect of what we've been doing, is just educating those groups on working with us early. The disconnect and reconnect fees, this turned into with our group was a matter of, for them, if they're helping somebody, if they get disconnected, it costs more money. Whether it's during hours or after hours, it's just more money. How do we avoid that? Well, for them, it's been knowing that to work with their customers, their clients, to get with us early. We can't do anything about the disconnect, reconnect fees at this point. It's a cost that we have incurred. We're keeping those policies in place. But if we can work with them early and to avoid the disconnect in the first place, that helps their money go further that they're using to provide assistance. That's an ongoing effort as well that we're going to continue to find ways to educate, get the word out to those agencies and to the groups that they work with. Discounts, in this case, we have a senior low income and a disabled low income discount, and the question was, could we expand those discounts? So right now I'm doing some investigation with Carrie's help. Carrie had some great information on different discount programs for public utilities in Washington State. It was last updated in 2014, and I'm working with some of the individual utilities and those programs to try and understand their program versus our program and levelize it, if you will, because our rate structures are different than their rate structures. How does their discount program compare to ours, and how do we stack up with other utilities in Washington State, public utilities? That's an ongoing process. I'm communicating with different utilities right now to try and get information beyond what their program is, but how does that impact their customers that receive the discounts? Ongoing effort right now. We're in the middle of the research. The landlord notification, this is an issue when, as you may know, we have an agreement with landlords that we're going to disconnect power in one of their housing units or rentals. We'll send them a notice that their unit's about to get disconnected. It was getting sent out earlier in the process. The feedback from our team was, we'd like to see that happen at a different point. Carrie worked with Jill in the CIS to find a different point of when we could send the mailing out. Now the landlord is notified at the time that the cut no pay is being issued. So somebody's actually getting ready to go out and disconnect. So that cuts down the number of the notifications that's going on, but it also doesn't go out until there's actual disconnect happening. What that does is that the landlord's not getting notified all the time if somebody's having a problem getting their bills paid, but they're actually paying them, but they would still get a notice that there's an issue. And in some cases, we were being informed by the groups we work with that that could be used negatively by some landlords for the tenants. So now it's going out when an actual disconnect is pending. And that was a great solution. Our team has agreed to that, and it's been working, and they appreciate the work that they had this issue. Carrie and her staff worked on a solution. We brought that back, and it's working at this point, as my understanding.
On that particular issue, are there any concerns about unintended consequences of that later notification of a landlord in a climate such as ours, electricity going out, cold weather, landlord may not be right there, you know, on the spot. Are there concerns about that?
If Carrie is willing to come up and address that, she's the one on the front line dealing with the landlords, or you can let me. I haven't heard any through Carrie, but I'll let Carrie address the question directly on that.
Carrie Wendell, Customer County Manager. We've had a little bit of concern from the Housing Authority, but we just made the change in
April,
so it may come up.
And this isn't the time of year when the issue would be at its height. Winter time would be a big issue.
Winter, yeah. And we haven't had it yet. Anything.
So that's something to consider.
Absolutely. So during our conversations with our group, other issues came up. George has talked about the bilingual phone line, and we have an opportunity with the phone system being upgraded to see how would we integrate that. So George and I are continuing to gather more information internally. We have drafted a little survey we can send out, but what we do know is one of the questions might be, do you currently have a need for this, or are you seeing an issue with this? We may not know because the line doesn't exist. I think Carrie's talked about anecdotally, when they had Spanish speakers in the front counter, they have more traffic. So if we have a way for a line or a way for people to, the bilingual or the Spanish speakers to talk with us, more likely than they will talk to us. So we don't want to use the survey to drive us if we say, no, I don't have an issue right now, because having the phone line may actually bring in more calls. Addressing disconnects when the landlord pays the bill. This is a situation in some cases where the tenant pays the bills, utility bills through their rent, and then what happens when the landlord doesn't pay the utility bill and the power gets disconnected? And so we're addressing that issue. We're just investigating how big of an issue is it. We've done some work on the numbers and realized that there's probably around 5,000 housing units in Chelan County that are we don't have a landlord agreement with, but they're rental units. This is just rough information off census data and some information off our CIS. But I don't know how big of an issue it is with it actually happening, so we're going to continue to investigate that with our group and then work on what solution might we have. Don't know yet. It's an issue that came up. The public power benefit. Last year, we took the ideas that came forward through solicitation of our public and asked our groups to look at these and give us our feedback, and they all did. But we want to make sure next year that, or the next round, if there's an opportunity for public power benefit ideas, that we're actually soliciting ideas from our groups instead of having them respond to ideas. We already talked about the state parks pass.
Question?
Yes, Commissioner.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. On the public power benefit,
mm-hmm.
I was just at a meeting a week ago. It was a forum. There were probably 50 people there. And somebody asked, how many of you know what the public power benefit is? And I'll bet 48 people in the room raised their hand. So I don't know. Somehow we need to do a better job of getting the word out. It seems like every meeting I go to, I mention it and say, here's what it is and here's the process. But it's a great term, PPB, public power benefit. But, you know, you pretty much need to say, you know what, it's nothing more than da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, just across the board, people aren't getting it very well.
And the final item I have is the conservation marketing efforts. And this is something that Conservation Department was doing. It wasn't part of what we have been promoting, but they're doing this. And this gets to the idea of having information a couple of different ways. They sent out this flyer here. It was targeted to a group that had those that are currently getting our discounts or those who look for energy assistance program. And so they targeted those, and they actually worked with Community Action Council, and they said there's a couple mobile home parks that could benefit from this. So they sent this out to that targeted group, Spanish and English. Hmm. They had another flyer about, I think this was on the duct ceiling, or pre-duct ceiling inspection of manufactured homes that they sent out, again, Spanish and English, so that information is getting out there in both languages. So hats off to Conservation Department for taking and recognizing there's some things and groups they need to target, and they're doing that. So for the next steps for us, we're going to continue this outreach that we're doing. We've got these items. We've got a roadmap. We're going to keep working with our groups. George and I, even if the new person comes on, we're going to stay on our roles right now that we have and help that person through this process. And as George mentioned, we're going to participate in the hiring process for that outreach position. And with that, any other questions?
Sean, have you guys reached out to Mission Vista Administrator? Have you spoken with Brandy Morrow?
Have not.
Okay. Mission Vista, Inc. is an organization that supports handicapped developmentally disabled adults. And for the most part, most of those adults are working. They're in a supported working environment, or not supported. But anyway, for the most part, they'll fall under low income, but not always. So, I've mentioned it before, Mission Vista. And the person to contact is Randy Morrill, M-O-R-R-I-L-L. And they have a vocational group. They have a housing group. They have a number of different supervisors. And so, if the supervisors all had the information, mm-hmm. That would be. And then they could, send it out from there. That would be really helpful.
Very good. Well, my contact.
Good. Thanks.
Gary, I have a question. Can you walk me through the real life application of a disconnect? So, is there any outreach that the district is doing prior to the disconnect that might be the point of contact and the point of education with respect to options for payment? Are we doing any of that?
I think it would best to have Carrie back up to the microphone, who lives this on a regular basis, as opposed to me trying to walk through that. And the short answer, there's a lot of communication. I'll let Carrie walk through that with you.
Okay.
Well, prior to the disconnect, in terms of avoiding the reconnect fees, does the district have any outreach program that would contact those individuals prior to be disconnected and would then educate them on the options that exist?
Okay. Well, I'll kind of go through the first bill. The first bill goes out and it's due in 30 days. And then the next bill, or 20 days. And then you don't get any, there's not a notice in between of when you get your next bill. But then at 45 days, that's when the disconnect notice goes out. So there's nothing in between except for on that second bill that says this amount is past due. On the back of the bill, it does show if you have a late amount, a late payment, and you have any questions or want to make arrangements, there's information on the back of both of any of the bills. Okay. But no contact is made.
No outreach.
Mm-mm. Okay. But then after that 45 days, and after that disconnect goes out, there's another 7 days that they have to pay it, and then we make a contact with them by phone.
That might be something for your team just to take a look at and see if there's value for spending all this time creating this outreach program. Maybe we're missing a step.
However, I do know that if folks can't pay their bill and they call the PUD, there are numerous options for them. The PUD will inform them of Community Action Council, of, there's a variety of different programs that are available to help people. I mean, I was a landlord once, and there are a number of programs, and the PUD folks, all of the folks who deal with this know that, and will share that information.
I think one of the graphics that Carrie provided during our process was the number of disconnect notices that get issued versus the number of disconnects that actually happen. And it, I'm going to say it's probably somewhere around 10% disconnects out of all the disconnect notices that get issued. It was a pretty low, very low number. So somehow the process is, whether they're calling or this late contact is being made or these groups talking to the different agencies, the actual number of disconnects is fairly low because of the amount of interaction that does take place between the customer and carry the customer accounting department.
So at some point, maybe not at that precise point we just discussed, but at some point there is a discussion with an employee of the district with the person whose power will be disconnected that says, here are some other options, and or you're going to be disconnected in 7 days.
We try to make contact with them. Okay. Mm-hmm. If we have a current phone number and sure. information. But, you know, something maybe to look forward to is with our new system, the customers hopefully will be able to set up their own notifications. And so if they can set up their own notifications that will remind them to pay the bill, or, you know, there are some things that we are definitely looking at in the new system for customers to have those options, and that's exactly why, you know, with you bringing that up is what customers ask for too, are just more notifications by email, and right now we don't have those options.
So great.
That might help, but
and that might be the answer.
For sure.
Yeah, certainly we don't want to take on a large burden in order to chase these people down. But at the same time, perhaps if we're going through the steps anyway, that might be something for your group to consider. Is some type of a formal last ditch outreach, whether it's email, phone, mail, something.
You know, we'll have to look into what their department's currently doing and what else. Is there something beyond that? I think, we'll definitely talk about it. And the value, if you see the numbers, that they're with the work that is going on.
Sure.
The other thing that you bring up and with the new system, our group that's in place is going to give us a sounding board for ideas and how do we move, what aspects of a new system can we put in.
Right.
So we have a great resource that's going to help us with that.
Good. That's good.
We also have a lot that wait for that notice because that's just the pattern that they pay payments. So yes. A lot of people wait for that red yeah. notice before they pay. So that's just their
yeah. way that they pay. Yes. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Stoll is going to provide us an update on the Whispering Ridge status.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Stoll. Just wanted to close the loop on Whispering Ridge. I know since March 20th when we had the event and a lot of the issues started, we worked through the power issues right away as we made sure that area was safe and reliable to re-energize. So that was relatively quickly. The more challenging issue to work through was providing water service. You might recall the water line up there had separated as part of the ground movement, and so a lot of those customers had been without water. Last week, we officially have the rest of the residences who live up there back in water. Ron Slaba and his team have been very creative in finding a way to temporarily supply water. And I know those residents are very happy to have that, and I appreciate their patience as we work through this. But just wanted to report out that the people who are living up there have full utility services, including fiber for those who take it.
All except there's a couple of houses that cannot be...
Correct. There are two houses where nobody's living in. One, I believe, is bank-owned, and then the other one is going through a pretty significant movement.
That's nothing short of amazing when you have seen the ground movement and the cracks that exist in the earth up there. It's a testament to you guys and your hard work to get those utilities back to those customers. So thank you.
Well, you know, the thanks goes to the team because everybody wants to have see customers have utility services, and I know it was a challenge when those people didn't have those, so they did what they could.
Thank you.
So that's it. Thank you.
Next up is Kelly Boyd. She's going to provide an update on the FEMA receivables.
Good afternoon. With Brett giving the update on the resolution, talking about the emergency use of crews and that some of those crews were used on the fire last year, thought it might also be a good time to update you on the status of our reimbursements to be received from FEMA. And through the end of June, we have now received about $1.3 million of the $1.5 million reimbursements receivable from FEMA for the 2015 fire costs. And in addition, the state of Washington did designate funds, and we received approximately $220,000 from the state for costs associated with work performed around the fires. So we still have some work to be done and some cost submittals to be made. So both of those items are in progress for a few remaining projects, and we'll keep you up to date on those subsequent receipts as we go. But good news on receipts so far.
Yeah. Any questions? That really is. Questions for Kelly?
I have one question. I wouldn't ask it if I knew. You've got to have the answer. The money that you've received, how much of that had you budgeted for in your this year's budget?
So 1.5 of the receivable from FEMA for 1.5 we recorded at the end of last year.
Okay.
So we had met all the criteria for recording that as received. So that actually got reduced against expenses last year. So of that we anticipated of 1.5 million from FEMA, we've received 1.3 so far. The state of Washington had not yet designated any funds for reimbursement, even though we had anticipated that we might have some. So that didn't meet all the criteria for last year. So none of that was recorded last year. So anything we receive from the state will go into this year's reduction of costs. It'll come in as a miscellaneous receivable and then get netted against those costs. So $220,000 is recorded this year that wasn't anticipated to be received, because we weren't sure if it would be have funding designated or not.
But you had enough foresight to know what was coming, that's for sure.
I would say, again, you know, credit to the team of trying to analyze if we've met the criteria to record those items. And then the hard work it takes to continue to complete those cost reimbursement submittals, and then work with the agencies to ensure that our information is eligible and done in the right way, because a lot of it's about following the right process.
Okay, we have one other item, which is also Kelly's favorite topic. She's going to talk to us about debt reduction.
And it is, and so I am excited to be able to report to you today that we achieved $22.5 million of our $22.6 million budget for net debt reduction for this year, with our scheduled principal payment that was made on July 1st. We still have one more small principal payment to be made in October, which is about $100,000. But we are pleased to have already achieved 99.5% of this important milestone in accordance with our plan. So debt outstanding for the end of this year is forecasted to be about $590 million, with a debt ratio of 43%. And we're right on track for that. And we're also on track for our strategic plan goal of lowering our debt ratio to less than 35% by 2019. And in fact, we anticipate that we may achieve that a year earlier in 2018 if all of our financial forecasting turns out as expected. The achievement of this goal reflects our values of stewardship, especially financial stewardship, and it aligns us with our customer owner's priority to reduce debt. It also demonstrates our trustworthiness, because we're doing what we said we would do. And then it also depicts operational excellence, because we're simplifying our debt portfolio which is more efficient to manage. So to close on my favorite topic, I also want to thank the board for your consistent commitment to maintaining the financial policy.
So do any of those values reflect just how proud you are of being able to achieve this?
All of them.
Good
thank
job,
you.
Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all of the manager items.
All right. Okay. We're down to commission items. We'll start right here.
Okay. I'm going to have to go to my phone because I didn't. I'm not the wrong form here. Okay. So I guess going back into June, the last week in June here. Okay, I did attend the 2016 quarterly audit review. Commissioner Smith and I were there. Also went to the port luncheon meeting the same day, and then that evening went to the Leavenworth substation public meeting in Leavenworth. I think we were all there, I think, and which was actually a pretty good meeting. I think we got real good reviews out of the process that we're doing, moving forward with substation location. Community seems to be well engaged and excited about the opportunity to work with the PUD, so it's all good there. Moving forward, also, let's see here, I guess we did have a breakfast on the 29th, where we get together with Commissioner J.C. Baldwin and Keith Gaynor. And Commissioner Smith and myself, we have a monthly breakfast where we talk about current issues and just trying to keep the communication lines open, and we find that pretty beneficial. I met with Steve also on a biweekly. Moving forward, I will be attending the state meetings over in Port Angeles. They'll start on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of July. So that's what I got going.
Gary.
I had the opportunity to spend some time with Eric, legal counsel, last week. And that was on the same day as our Leavenworth substation community meeting, which went, as Commissioner Bergeron said, quite well. What impressed me, and I think also impressed those in the audience, is the level of transparency and openness in terms of the site selection, involving the community and helping to look for that location, but more importantly, explaining why it's necessary and the benefits to the community of having this redundancy and duplicate system put in place. That meeting went very, very well. Looking forward, there's also, I will be attending the Washington Public Power Utility District meetings over in Port Angeles in the middle of the month of July. And I see I have another meeting scheduled with Eric coming up later in the month.
Okay. Ann.
Okay. I attended the quarterly water meeting. So as the representative to the Water Committee, we meet separately four times a year, sure, separately from the WAPUTA meetings. So that was a day-long meeting, and I will not then be attending the WAPUTA meetings in Port Orchard next week, 13th, 14th, 15th. Yeah. And I attended the Leavenworth substation meeting as well, once I found it.
You got there.
No signs. There were no signs anywhere. And then going forward, I'll be attending the Northwest Public Power Association strategy planning meeting in Vancouver, BC, the 19th and 20th of this month. I will be meeting with, I did meet with General Manager Steve Wright and Dennis Bowles. And I also met with Fred Weiss in Manson, a local resident, over a bit of a thorny issue. So that's all I have.
Okay. Well, looking back, I did attend the audit committee meeting, had catch-up meetings with Eric and with Steve, breakfast meeting with my fellow Upper Valley commissioners, looking at next week. Next week is, for me, 6 days of PUD business, and the schedule will be brutal. I've got, as your representative to the APPA policymakers, I fly into Washington, D.C. for meetings on Monday and Tuesday, catch a late flight back to get in at midnight on Tuesday, and leave early Wednesday morning to go to Port Angeles because I'm the chair of the Energy Committee. And so it's no rest for the wicked, I guess. Looking forward to all of those meetings. I actually promised some of the APPA staff that I would take my last lug of cherries and put it in the refrigerator and take it to Washington, D.C. So we're going to have fresh cherries back there in Washington, D.C. I'm hoping to get on their good side.
You will be very popular. Yes.
My commission items, and Lisa has some commission items for us.
Better introduce yourself.
Lisa Sanders.
Thank you.
So we'll be reviewing your planned travel for the next few months. As Commissioner Smith mentioned, he's got a couple back-to-back trips coming up. One in D.C. and Port Angeles. I have all commissioners attending except Commissioner Congdon. And Commissioner Congdon, I think you just mentioned a trip that
you're not aware of.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if we can touch base.
We'll get together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Berggren will be attending the Energy Northwest board meeting later this month. Commissioner Congdon, NWPPA, is this what you were talking about?
No, that is that's different. The quarterly board meeting. No, this is in July, and it's a strategic planning meeting for officers. I'll text you or call you.
Okay. Yeah. So for September, we need to do your airfare. Mm-hmm. And September 14th through 16th, we have Waputa. Looks like we have all attending except Commissioner Arsenault. Then Energy Northwest again for Commissioner Berggren in October. Oh, it looks like that's the one that all the board will be.
They're all invited to it.
Okay. So
I can tell you, I won't be attending that.
I won't be able to attend either.
Okay. So I will check in with Commissioners Berggren, Arsenault, and Bowles.
I plan on going.
You do? We have Waputa again in November. We have hotel rooms held for all of those, and also for the November 30th through December 2 Waputa meetings, we have hotels held for those as well. So let me know if there's any corrections or changes that need to be made, and then I'll touch base with Commissioner Congdon for a July trip, and then also for the October Energy Northwest meeting.
So I have a question. The September meeting in Goldendale, really the only way to get there is to drive 6 hours, right?
No, it's about three.
For me, it's a lot more than three.
From here, it's about three.
No, I think it's more. But anyway, yeah. So it probably doesn't make sense to fly to Portland and then...
It's 3 hours from Portland.
Yeah, it's just a tough place to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everybody's probably driving. Well, certainly everybody's driving.
Yeah.
Maybe I can carpool. We'll see. I'll let you know.
Okay. Any questions? Anything else I can do for you?
No. Nice job.
Great. That's great. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa.
Good. It's helpful for me too, so I appreciate your time.
Good.
Thanks.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Follow up on...
So, Commissioners, maybe I could just raise one issue. I hope you have a memo in front of you. We don't have to handle it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's coming. it's an issue that needs to be addressed, but I just offer the commission to take it in the time on the agenda that it believes to be appropriate. It's a for the public, it's a proposed motion to change the start time for the July 18th board meeting to 9 a.m. And to convene in an executive session in order to review the performance of a public employee under the statutes.
We can handle it either now or wait till
I just didn't want to lose matters
of general business. Either
so
way.
Why don't I just make that motion right now? I move, Mr. Chairman, I move to change the start time of the July 18, 2016 board meeting to 9 a.m. and to convene an executive session for the purpose of examining the qualifications of an employee or something close to that.
Performance, yes.
Employee's performance, thank you.
Okay, motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to change the start time for our July 18th meeting to 9 a.m. and convene an executive session for the four stated reasons. Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, before we leave commission item, I have a question, just a general question as far as the, in Plain, you know, we approved that project, that kind of a park by the substation. I got a call, it was inquiring about when that project was going to be started, its completion date, that kind of. Do we have any information on that?
So I don't know. First, two things. First, I'll leave Jeff Smith to give you the specific answer to your dates. But I do want to correct the perception. Certainly, if you're getting phone calls out there that we're putting a park next to.
Well, not a park.
Parking.
Parking.
Yes, Commissioner, I completely agree that under the proposal that we received, we were asked to improve some parking and really create a safer environment. In there for folks that are using it.
Finish my pronunciation.
No, that's quite okay, Commissioner.
Right.
But
thanks for pointing that out.
If I let that stand on the record, we'll get additional calls. I'm sure. So.
And it's there, and we're not putting in a trail per se either.
Yeah, we're not. No, this is really a property owner liability issue.
Right.
If we're going to allow the use, we need to make sure it's safe for the use that we're permitting.
Right.
Jeff? Good clarification.
Thank you.
Short answer is later in the year. We met on Friday up there, and we're just looking at concepts right now.
No, okay.
Start time yet.
All right. I did know. I know we approved the funding for it, and it wasn't sure.
Yeah, we haven't even started design at this point.
I didn't think we did. I'm just curious.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Good question, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Follow up on delegation of action items.
Yes. from the June 20th board meeting, we had one action item. What is the district's current net interest expense, less interest income? That email was sent on the same day, June 20th. For 2015, it was approximately $24 million. 2016, current projected is $21 million net interest expense. And if you'd like, we'll move on to the delegation of action items today.
Sure.
Two action items, both of them related to the Diverse Leader Group and also PPB. Suzanne Hartman, following up with Carnan on the outreach to the Latino Hispanic segment, and also Commissioner Congdon's suggestion to contact Mission Vista, Randy Morrill, and get the word out about the public power benefit and low income. So both of those are gone as action items.
All right. Super. Is there any additional public comment? Any other matters to come before the commission before we take a short break and go into executive session for approximately an hour? If there's no other business, we will take a 5-minute recess and come back and do executive session.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You. It's 3:23 on July 5th. We're coming out of executive session. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.